Blog Talk Radio.
Quiet, please. Welcome to Rex Sykes Movie Beat, conversations with filmmakers where we discuss everything film and television. Here on Movie Beat, you'll learn what to do and what not to do when it comes to making movies and TV. We will talk to everyone behind the scenes and in front of the camera, and they'll provide you with the guests and the information you're going to want to have, whether you're a filmmaker or a fan. And so now let's move behind the scenes here at Movie Beat. My guest today is Mr. Peter Marshall. He's returning. We're doing a director series. This is part 19. 19 hours of incredible information dedicated to the director breaking down the script, working with actors, shooting the scenes, casting the project. We've all talked about this. This is from the director side. It's not a screenwriter. It's not an actor. It's not, you know, we're not talking from those positions. We're talking from Peter's expertise as a director about what directors do in doing these things. And we're going to come back, and I'll tell you more about that in just a moment. We'll have Peter on. If you're listening live, the chat room is open. You can join us in the chat room, and I encourage you to do so now. If you're listening archived, that option's not available to you, but maybe next time. All of these interviews record live and are then archived, and they're available using the very same link that you would use to listen live. That's the cool thing about that. They're at RexSykes.com. That's the official website, my name, for Rex Sykes Movie Beat. It's RexSykes.com, RexSykes.com, at the interviews blog. And there you just go, scroll through the archives, look, say, for Peter's name, and then there's a biography of Peter. And in there, it'll say to listen or an upcoming show date. And you just click on the bolded link below that. In this case, it would be number 19. And you listen. Now, if you haven't listened to any of the other ones before, it doesn't mean you can't start listening right now and then go back and listen to all the other fine information at your leisure, because you can listen to them anytime, 24/7. They're also all of the interviews that are archived there are archived also at Blog Talk Radio, and they're available as podcasts from the iTunes store. There's over 300 hours of programming of professional filmmakers sharing their expertise with you, secrets, how-tos, what not to do, advice, you know, suggestions, gold nuggets for you to advance your career and make your projects faster, smoother, less expensively, to get it from idea to screen and beyond. They're all available for you to download, free. All we ask in return is that you right now go ahead and invite somebody, whether you're listening live or archived, to join you in listening and or to join you in the chat room. You can do that by Twitter, Facebook, email, in person. If you're at a coffee shop somewhere around a bunch of filmmakers, go ahead and tell them what's going on and invite them to listen in with you. That helps us get my guests and their information out to other filmmakers who may not know. And also, don't leave the show without leaving a comment. In other words, at the player, below the chat window there, however it appears for you, there's a comment window. Please leave comments. That helps us with the search engine optimization. It helps us be more visible on the internet. Also, rate and review the podcasts at the iTunes store. Again, it helps us extend our reach to others who may not yet know about us, but who could benefit from being here. All right, I want to thank those who are entering the chat room at this time. And Peter Marshall's had an over 35-year career. He's done everything almost behind the camera. He's been a first AD. In fact, he's the author of excellent products for the first AD on scheduling and breaking down your shoot. And as a director, he's got a fabulous product for the directors. I've got both of those products. In fact, I've got all of his products, and I've benefited greatly from utilizing and listening to those products. But he's a wealth of information, and without any further hesitation, I'm going to bring Peter on and continue our discussions. Hi, Peter. How you doing?
Good morning, Rex. Very well, thank you.
Awesome. All right. Well, it's been a while since we last talked, and this is not going to be the last time we speak either. There's going to be further episodes. But before we get that far, what actioncutprint.com is your website, and that's you correct. Also have an e-zine, and
yep, the director's chair. Which, yeah.
And you have film directing tips?
Yeah, that's my daily blog, yes.
His daily blog. And you also have something coming up. So let's talk about that right off the bat, because this is new and for the listeners, because you direct and you teach directing, and what's going on?
I got contacted by Raindance Canada. Their organization, Elliot Grove, is in London, and Raindance is sort of spread all across the globe a little bit, and they give me a call about coming into Toronto and doing some workshops. So we have a workshop set up on June 23rd and June 24th in Toronto called The Essentials of Film Directing, a two-day workshop, and they can get more information at raindancecanada.com. And I'm looking forward to that, and this is sort of the first of many we hope to be doing out in Toronto. So it's a two-day workshop, and then after that we hope to be doing a master class maybe the end of the summer, beginning of September as well. So I'm very excited about that. I've done a lot of workshops in Vancouver, a few other places around the world, but haven't hit Toronto yet. So this is the first time I'm heading into that area, which also means kind of the northern part of the States and everything too. So it's kind of nice to be able to do that. So that's June 23rd, 24th, raindancecanada.com. They can probably find the information on the website there. Raindance Canada, Toronto, so they can do that.
Will you be putting any information on your website?
Yes, both my website and blog have all the information right now. So they can go and find that out. Yep, no problem.
Okay, cool. Very, very cool. So just to catch listeners up, we've talked about so many things from you know, the script and breaking it down, and then working with actors and breaking down elements of their performance, and we're now coming up on continuing the work with actors, but the four types of actors, and. Can you tell me a little bit about what you mean by this?
Yeah, I think a lot of the stuff that people have been listening to this program, and it's I've tried to demystify a lot of different kind of things, and so I tend to categorize, I think, three of this, four of this, nine of this. It just makes things a lot simpler. And, you know, in all my teaching at the Vancouver Film School and all the workshops I do, too, it's just something that's always valuable, because there's so much information out there. Putting in sometimes in bullet points, I find, really helps. But I did find this somewhere else, so it's really not mine. But when I talk about four types of actors, it's not really – I'm not referring to an acting style, like the so-called, you know, method or reality or technical style, but more an actor's presence on screen. And I thought it was always interesting because, you know, we talk about human behavior and understanding, you know, about all that process. So I thought, well, this is interesting from an actor point of view. So I'm just going to read them because it's, you know, just so that we can get an understanding of it. So the first one is like the character actor, and someone who sort of brings a new image every time to an audience. That it's part of their own psych or part of something that the audience can respond to the actor in the new role. Now, that seems a little vague, and it is, actually, but it's sort of hard to describe. But I guess examples would be Meryl Streep, Dustin Hoffman, you know, Jamie Foxx, that they are that new character. I mean, we look at Meryl, and she is the person, or Jamie Foxx becomes that person, and I think that's an all-around actor. It's categorized as a character actor. The second one is a personality actor. I guess they have sort of their own identity when you see them, or a certain aura about them. You know, the camera can capture it. They look that role. I think the examples I have are John Wayne, for example. In my very humble opinion, you know, John Wayne was John Wayne. His acting abilities were, and again, this is my own opinion, so I don't want everybody to heat up Twitter and everything like that, but, I mean, he wasn't the greatest actor in the world, but he was John Wayne. He fit the role that he was doing. His persona, his personality was, yep, that's John Wayne, and we expected that when we went to see the movie.
Absolutely.
We didn't expect anything else. And I think, and that's so valuable. I think a little bit, you know, Humphrey Bogart to a certain extent. Rowan Atkinson. I mean, there's a girl. I'm a Mr. Bean fan, and all of the stuff that Rowan does. But you expect a certain thing, his personality, comes out. So there's really a personality, okay? And yes, they can be fabulous actors too, but it's like a lot of it is that personality. You know, maybe, I don't know, I think, you know, Humphrey Bogart, maybe Marilyn Monroe, you know, there's lots of people. It's all individual, right? The third kind of actor I look at is really the physical actor. I guess it's an ideal look, or a lot of it is these actors have maybe a particular physicality or some way that's extraordinary. I think if anybody remembers Marty Feldman with his bug eyes, you know, in all those early movies, I think the 70s and that kind of thing. He was just an amazing. You know, Danny DeVito, you know, is unique body size for the business, right? I mean, he's even Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, and I think that it's they're very physical looking actors. Or I put Pee Wee Herman down here too because maybe Jim Carrey to a certain extent, you know, although I think he fits more of a character actor in that sense. And then the fourth kind is the natural actor. This is people that are found in the streets, like Fellini movies. Kids fit all this pretty well too, because they're not actors, you know. They're just natural, and I think that that's part of the process. And if you look at the Bicycle Thief, De Sica's Bicycle Thief, and near you know, right after the war, during the war, and all of that is all real people. Performing, and we see that quite often, and it gives a whole other sense of reality, I guess, if you will. So again, there could be more. Some of these could be combined. It's basically just something that we look at, and you know, when we're casting, we're looking at people. I don't think we categorize them like that. We don't categorize people like that in our sense. Are they good actor or bad actor is really what we're boiling it down to. But I just thought it's always interesting to see that there's these range of actors in different styles, if you will, that we should be aware of.
Absolutely. Very cool. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think we're going to start talking about the casting process today,
right?
I believe. Is that what we're doing? Yeah.
Right, absolutely. As we move forward into the casting, you know, we keep that in mind because I mean, that is the kind of thing that when you're in a casting session, oftentimes you will see someone come in, and I mean, you see, you know, having a template, you can actually see the different kinds of actors there inside
yeah.
it. You know, one who fits it. So it's I always like it when I can simplify my perceptions.
Yes. Well, I also call it take the blinders off, too. Casting is, I've always called it the bottleneck of the film industry. You don't know what bottleneck is. It's the bridges over a city at rush hour. You know, it's like four lanes going into one or two. And it's like that's a bottleneck. And as an actor yourself, as a producer and as a director, you've seen it from both sides. And casting is, I don't know what it is about casting, but it's like the most important ingredient. It's almost one of the most important ingredients in making film, and the whole process we have to go through it is so silly sometimes and so difficult and so hard on everybody. And I've been involved in a lot of casting sessions as a director and then also as a teacher, and you really get to see how both sides deal with this process. And believe, and I'm for all the any actors listening to this program, believe me, I'm not going to say just as hard, because I think you have the harder job walking into a room, yes, and performing to look for a job, and I understand that, because if I'm in the room, I already have the job. But it's still a very difficult to say, an actor walks in 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and how are we supposed to decide, you know, for our movie as well, you know, who's right for the role? So what I want to do is today, just sort of talk about some of the ways how to do that from a director's point of view, and also from a producer's point of view, and like how to find certain things, what to look for in a casting session. And that's just so important. And I think like anything else that we've talked about in this series, it starts with the script. It starts with the director's script analysis, to read the script, to go over it, to break the scenes down into their scene objectives, and to break and then to talk about the character objectives. And we talked about dividing character objectives into text and subtext. And before you go into the casting session, you should have a lot of these things written down on your script or wherever you want to do it, because you want to be able to play a little bit, and you have to really be open. And we all have an idea in mind of the role we want, or the certain character type, if you will, like just the four types that I just sort of talked about. But what's going to happen is if you keep looking for just that particular person that you're after, you're going to miss a lot of other magic. And it's like anything in life. If you have a particular car in mind, that's all you want is this color, and you're going to ignore everything else, you're going to ignore a lot of, you're going to miss a lot of other opportunities. And that's the same in casting. So your script analysis is incredibly important. So whatever scenes you're doing for the casting, make your little notes. Write, we talked about verbs and all those kind of things. Like, just write little objectives on the side of the script, or verb things that you want to do. Because, you know, as in the heat of the moment, you want to just refer to your script and maybe throw a few notes out to the actors. And then, you know, a character breakdown, too. It's like, what's the character about? What's the role? What are we looking for? Because when actors get sides or their agents phone them, there's usually, a little paragraph of what the film is about, and that's it. And then a character breakdown. The character is 25-year-old, blah, 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 doing this and doing that. And then they have the sides. Sides, for those who don't know, are just small versions of the script scenes, just the scenes that they're going to audition for. Unless you're sort of a major actor, when you're auditioning, you never get the whole script. You just get the scenes they want. So you really have no idea what's coming before, what's coming after. So even that is problematic. It would be so good if actors read the whole script, they had an idea of what was happening, and then they can come in. But, of course, that's almost impossible. No one's sending whole scripts out, and actors aren't going to sit there and read it all either. So that's the initial process. And so the key thing to casting is, you know, the actors have to make a choice. So if you're an actor, and Rex, I certainly want you to speak up on this more, because you've been on the other side and how you prepare. But essentially you send a script out and you want the actors to prepare something, make a choice. And I think that's really those three magic words again, is an actor. I want an actor to step in the room and have already made a choice and not be wishy-washy. And because whether it's right or wrong for the role, I'll talk about this in a minute. I'll make an adjustment to go some other direction. And that's what I'm beginning to find out. Because I think, in essence, actors have to understand that in the first audition they step into the room, they're not getting hired at that point, or very rarely do they get hired. There's two or three other areas they have to go through in order for that to happen. There's two or three other steps, I mean. So by making a strong choice, then we know that you've done your homework and that you're making a choice based on only the information you have, not on all these other elements. And a lot of actors come in and they don't really make active choices. They're trying to be in the middle. They're not quite sure. And you can see it in their performance. You can see it when they're doing it. And that takes away from what I'm looking at as a director, you know, can they act? Or, you know, do they have range? You know, whatever it is. So that's my first note for actors, of which directors we can't do anything about. We can't go and say, well, make sure you make a choice. That's your job as an actor, right? And right. Not to be wishy-washy and not to, okay, well, I think they want this and I think they want this. And then, you know, and then you sit out in a hallway with 10 other people going for the same role and you hear people talking and you see them, and they start changing your mind, right? You know,
it's so true. Well, you know, they also, you all look the same and, you know, you're probably all dressed the same and, you know, it's like, geez. But in what you said, whether you have a silent bit, you know, all it is a little description of what the actor does, whether you have one page in a side, whether you got five pages, I think what's important for the actor to do is to do as much homework on that scene if they have the time afforded to them. You know, if it's a cold read, you know, and they're walking in and they haven't got the sides and they've got 20 minutes before they're called in, they got to learn to do this very fast. But, you know, they need to break down the scene. They need to find their conflicts. They need to know what the major beats are. They don't necessarily have to memorize it, but they need to be able to know it so that they can, you know, not be looking at the script, be looking up. But that character the character breakdown that we talked about, or the scene analysis that we talked about in the other episodes that the director would do, you know, that the actor does, are the same things that they need to do prepping for the audition, because there's going to be somebody out there, and trust me on this one, who's going to sit down and they're going to have typed out, you know, a 20-page backstory on this character and who their sisters, families, mothers, husbands were 25 years ago. They're going to have, as you know, flesh this out, given it thought, they're going to go, what kind of physical anomalies may I have, or do I limp, or do I chew gum, or, and they will put all this effort and stuff into it to make choices, and thereby, even if they don't use a tenth of that or a percent of it, they study the character, they come in with a choice, versus, you know, the person who walks in and goes, oh, okay, you know, I'm a guy at the laundromat and I'm chatting up this girl. You know, I mean, I'm just me chatting this girl. And I learned as an actor, there were times when, you know, I tried to make, you know, these, you know, find the conflict. There were times when I thought, you know, what's important for me now is just be very naturalistic so that they could see I could act on camera. And it didn't want really have strong choices. It was just about me being conversational and, you know, and all that. So, I mean, you know, we try all these different things and variations, and yet what the producer or director wants to see is what you say. They want to see the choice that you made, that you've come in with, that you're, you know, professional and you know what you're doing, and to have it be something bold, that, I mean, in that it stands out, and it will if you do all of the homework required. You know, I mean, it won't if you just give it a cursory thought and then go in and read.
Right. I mean, you create a real character through subtext, not through the lines
right.
you're reading on the page.
Right.
And it's so, you know, and unfortunately, a lot of directors don't understand this. I think from an act, this is why I call it a bottleneck. This is why I call it a very difficult process for both sides, because actors can walk into a room and deal with directors that don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't even have, it's okay, well, they're not blonde. Okay, so, you know. Literally, I've been in, you know, it's like, well, they're not blonde, so they're no good. Well, have you ever heard of a wig? Have you ever heard of dyeing your hair? Like, they look for physical characteristics and then just hope that they can do something else. And or producers and directors, same thing. So actors, that's why you have to come in doing something strong. I have an expression, I think I've said it in your show before, but it's a really good one. And no is already there. The answer no is already there. So what have you got to lose? So the chances are there's 10 of you sitting out in a hallway. Right? Nine of you are going back to driving a cab or whatever you're doing, right? Or working
right.
or going to an audition, whatever it is. So no's already there when you walk in the room. The chances of any actor getting a role are extremely slim. That's the nature of your business, and you know that, Rex. So what differentiates other actors, what separates actors out, is walking in. I'm going to go over kind of these steps in a minute to give more information here. But it's the wow factor. It's like, whoa, okay, we got something here. Because I want the actors to understand that you want to get through the callbacks. You've got to get through this first bottleneck, this first step, this first sort of the first mass cattle call audition, whatever it is. And so many auditions, you know, are happening where the directors and producers aren't even in the room now. I mean, I've done TV series. You know, I go to another city or something, I'm on a TV series, and I see the tapes. I get tapes, and I sit in the room, the producer's office, and we look at the tapes, right? And
mm-hmm.
then I'm supposed to choose someone from the tape that I haven't even talked to.
Right.
So it's extremely difficult, because then I'm kind of skipping around a bit, but it's the same process. I mean, remember when that happens to me, I want to make sure that, okay, this is the first audition, I still get callbacks. So Before I step in, I want to make sure I talk to the producer. Say, is the casting real? Like, is it in front of me, or is it on tape? And like, I was in Halifax shooting a TV series, and of course the casting was. But we were south of Halifax, about an hour where the town was. We were shooting, and then so the casting's done in Halifax and Toronto. I couldn't get there, so I want to know that. So I said, fine. So what I do is I phone the casting director, and I knew what the I picked the sides, I picked the scenes. And I said, this is the adjustment, which I'll talk to you about. This is the adjustment I want you to give them so that at least I have a little bit of say in the matter so I can see that. And then when I see it, then I see the tape, and then we'd say, okay, well, instead of 10 actors, here's two or three we're going to look at. And then I'll phone, I'll say, this is what I want you to do. So I take action on myself and not just allow people to do whatever they want. I want to dictate how the casting's done, even if I'm not in the room. And so that's something that I think directors listening to this podcast is really understand that you've got to have a major input here and not just leave it to other people. So that whole process, walking in the room, is, like I said, is very difficult. And so not only do the actors have to do your homework and make choices, and I said, again, create real characters through subtext. Create some kind of character. Directors have to also do your homework on your scripts and all of that, and that's important. So, again, the process for all those who have been to the horrible concept of casting is the actor. So you're sitting out in the hallway and your name is called, okay? And don't forget, I keep saying no's already there. And this is such a big subject, casting, isn't it? It's amazing. You walk into the room, and it's like, there's so many qualities we look for in an actor as a director. But, again, to demystify things and boil everything down into very simple stages, I've got three qualities that I think it's important. And I'm talking producers, casting directors, and directors here, because those are the three people in the room that count, to look for an actor. And the first one, when an actor steps in, is really, do they look the part? And, of course, that's automatic. They haven't opened their mouth yet. Is this sort of somebody you're looking for? And that's what I call the 50% rule. 50% is the actor's got 50% right there, either for or against them, if they don't even look the role, boom. Now you're dealing with, you don't have that 50% to deal with. But if all of a sudden they walk in and go, whoa, that's exactly what we're looking for, you're starting at 50%.
Right.
So now you're going to go
right
up. You don't even look the part, you're still at zero. So you better be a damn good actor. It's just human nature, right? We look at first impressions, okay? So so that concept is first impressions. You walk in the room, and that's what our mind goes through. Yes, no, not the right color, not the right height, not the right hair, whatever it is. It doesn't matter. And that all happens in a couple seconds. I always find that from a director's point of view, I stand up, I go over, I shake their hand, I introduce myself, I introduce the producer, the readers, as much as possible. Because the key thing is, you're pretty nervous walking in. It's like an interview, right? So you're sitting out there, you're pretty nervous walking in, and there's like four people. It's kind of like what's the music, It's like, who's the best singer now? What are those shows called? You stand out on stage, and there's like all those guys looking at you and judges, right?
Or like a beauty contest or something.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very, very difficult for an actor. So you want to break the ice. You got to calm them a little bit. Introduce yourself. Even if you don't get up, you just say, I'm Peter Marshall. I'm the director. This is Blue Jetta. These are all the people. And the first thing you want to do is you do a slate, right? I mean, it varies slightly differently everywhere, but basically I like to get all that, what I call housekeeping, out of the way. Let's first thing we do is just introduce everybody, and then, okay, do your slate, and you say your name and agent you're with and what character you're reading for, et cetera. And then I'll say, okay, well, do you have any questions? And hopefully they don't. Not that I don't want to answer them. It's just that I don't want to give the actor any other information that could confuse them at this point. I want them to do what they've done without any other input. And that's a secret, a little secret as well. Now, if an actor says, yeah, I'm not quite sure, is this or this, and I'll answer it very succinctly, like one line or one word or yes or no or something. I just find that the less information I give them, the better. And most actors will walk in, and I think from your experience, right, can really not have any question because you've already done the work. Maybe a word, or is this how you pronounce the city? Something technical like that is fine. And then, they're talking to a reader. So the actors will come in, and obviously there's, the table's in front, the camera's there, and they read to the reader, and the reader is standing beside the camera so that we get on tape. Or a lot of times we're looking at the monitor instead of them. We kind of see full face. So then the key thing is. And here's another note, the reader. The reader is probably the second most important person in your room. Not the camera, not you, not anything, because you're going to get it on tape later. Because you want a reader that's, an actor. And I think a lot of good casting agencies do that. It's actors will come in and they get paid and they read. They know the script, they know the idea, and they want to give 100% to the actor because that's all that actor has to hang on to. And actors walk in and you've got to sort of find your friends, right? Rex, you got to go, where's my friends on the set? Is it a focus puller? Is it this? Is it, you know? But in a casting session, it's you're looking at the reader. And if the reader is just literally reading, you know, it's just somebody, secretary in the hallway, and they've got just reading this stuff, they're not getting, you're not getting the full effect of the casting. So from a director's point of view, I always say, well, who's reading? Like, who's the reader? I don't care who the cameraman is, you know, but who's the reader? And it's like, is it an actor? So that I can give directing notes also to the reader. And I've done that. Sometimes I've never done, I don't give directing notes to the actor. I'll give directing notes to the reader because that, in effect, will change something. Or ahead of time, I'll say, okay, I want you to do this, and the actor doesn't know about this. And I can play with it. I want to see the reactions. I want to see how they deal with certain things. And that's all relative to whatever you're doing, of course. So the actor will come in your role, and boom, they do their first, whatever they've done. And of course, before I say you have the whole room, you can go over here, you can go anywhere you want, or you don't go past this line or whatever. Like, don't restrict them. Just tell them where they can go. And then they do their first thing. And then here's the secret. The second thing is I make
Before you get to the second thing, hold that. Please do hold that. I got to take a break right now. We're at that halfway point. And I just want to get to, it'll be a brief break. All right. Thank you, Peter.
Yep.
You're listening to RexSykes.com. It's Rex Sykes Movie Beat, the official web address. And all of the interviews are live and archived. Be sure to listen. Be sure to spread them. Be sure to leave comments and to download them from the iTunes stores. And when you do, rate and review the shows. Leave a comment before you leave the air today, before you leave, whether you're listening live or archived. You can always join us in the chat room if you're listening live. Upcoming guests are Kim Swanson is returning, casting director. She's going to come back and talk more about that. We're still trying to reschedule Clint Howard, hopefully for next week, but stay tuned. We'll let you know. Peter Foldy is a musician director. He'll be coming up. And Jason Brubaker is a filmmaker, producer, and author. He's got some projects out there, and he'll be returning to Rex Sykes Movie Beat. Also, just so you know, Peter will come back at another time. We'll let you know when that is. His website is actioncutprint.com. He's also got Film Directing Tips, his blog, and The Easing, the Director's Chair, so you want to look into those. And we're back here with Peter Marshall live. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Peter, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. So, again, after the actor comes in, okay, that's the whole process, right, about making a choice, coming in, the actor does their first, they do their first read, whatever it is. And then the secret here is then for the director to make an adjustment. And really, if the adjustment is taking the actor to a different direction than they were in before. And this is the secret, because what happens is the three things you really want to know about an actor are, number one, do they look the part? Do they look the role? And that's sort of comes in within the first few seconds when they walk in the door, okay? The second one is, do they have range? And what I mean by range is, can they laugh in the scene and cry and it's believable? It all boils down to, is it believable? What's the range? How far can they go from one side to the other? And some actors have a small range, and some actors have a huge range, you know, like a Kevin Spacey kind of one side to the other, you know, like how far can they go? I call it the box, you know, how big is the box? How far can they go? And the third thing, which is all related to that, is can they take direction? You know, are they listening to you? Are they changing? Are they changing up? So what happens now is after they do their first take, as a director, you make an adjustment. So I'm just going to be very simple here, is like if they come in and the scene is sort of read, they've sort of, you could read it either way, but they've read it kind of sad and the character's sad, so they are in that kind of process, then what you want to do is to do their, find out if they're range and if they can take direction. You say, okay, well, let's do that again, you know, but at the same point, ultimately, it's going to be a little funnier. And that kind of screws around your mind a little bit, because you want to see, can they do that? Can they play that? Because what it is, it's not the text, it's the subtext. You want to see right away, can they do that quick? Can they do the subtext? And good actors will be able to do that. Now, you have to, I have specific ways of doing that with verbs, which I'll talk about in a minute, and then you go again, and then you see. So what happens if an actor walks in, does it one way, you give an adjustment, and they do it completely different, and it's believable, you now have an actor that, number one, has got some range, and number two, is taking direction, Number three, they're thinking on their feet. They understand the acting process. Like, all within a minute, you can detect that. Are they right for the role? You may not know that yet. But the thing is, you can say, you know what? They're worth maybe coming back for a callback because you still want to play a little bit. So all of that. Now, if an actor doesn't go to the extreme or goes to the extreme and it's just right off the mark, and they don't do it, that means sort of, well, you have to also look at yourself as director. Did I give the right note? Okay. But assuming you did, maybe they don't have the range. Maybe if they so focus and they're going to learn the audition, they're going to learn, they walk in, and if anybody does it differently, they're going to freeze. Well, if they do that in the audition, then what's going to happen on the set? You know, actors have to be trained. You know, that's the whole process.
Right. You know, I want to kind of back up through some of the things that you said and see that if I can remember them, and give you some comments from my perspective, both as an actor and producer, director, whatever. But this is stellar information, and you know, every director should be listening, and every actor, you know, should really listen and embrace this material that Peter is offering. I don't want to prevent you from going on, but there's some thoughts that I wanted to include, and that is, first off, one of the things that when I'm sitting in the room, if I'm lucky enough to be sitting in the room casting, the thing I do is I watch for how people come in, and I always tell people, if you're coming in as a serial killer, don't come in with attitude, you know, don't come in and freak me out. Don't freak out the assistant out in the lobby, you know, or at the outer office. Be friendly, you know, be an actor that can turn it on. Now, some people will feel very different about that, but in a recent casting experience, for example, there was some actor who came in, and he had an issue with his call time about it being whatever, and he gave the assistant a lot of hassle, and when he walked into the room, he was a little huffy, and he, as far as I was concerned, he looked like 95% for what the part called for, but sadly, he lost the role before he even got to read because he hassled my assistant and caused her problems. He came in, he didn't have attitude with me, but I mean, he had this kind of huffiness to him, which would have even been appropriate for the role. But I went, I don't know if I want this guy on my set at that point. In other words, what's going to happen if he's not, if he doesn't get called at the time he thinks he's supposed to be called? Who am I going to be dealing with? You know, sadly he lost it before he even got to read, and his reading was fine. I mean, it wasn't great. But that was the case, and I almost was ready to say thanks very much for coming in, but no. But I didn't want to go that route. So I let him read just in case. So attitude with how you come in and how you approach people and everything else. You talked about the reader. I think the reader, and boy, I encourage any actor and any director, whenever they can. I mean, if you're a young director now, if you know a casting director somewhere in Hollywood or New York or in Vancouver or whatever, and you can ask them if you can read, be the reader, or if you can operate the camera, get inside that casting room as frequently as you possibly can.
What an experience, yeah.
Because it is such a different... You know, and to read, I want my readers to give the person something. And I've been there where some readers just read as if, you know, they've never looked at a script before or they've never even read out loud. And then there are others who actually act with the person. I want to give the actor something. I hate an experience when I come in and as an actor, the person just, you know, reads offhandedly as if they could care less whether I'm, you know, what I have to do. And I know that's not a preference for everybody, but I want them to be consistent, and I want the reader to be professional and to take it as seriously as the other person, because I think, you know, that's respect for the actor to be as professional as you possibly can. And so from the director's side, because I look at this as, you know, we always expect the actor to be professional, but there are a lot of filmmakers out there, and I've gone to a lot of casting things for low-budget non-union or union movies, you know, kind of thing, that are horrible casting sessions, you know, and I go, I will never do that again just because of the way you're treated as an actor walking in. So, you know, respect is both sides.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is both sides. And you know, normally we think of a professional situation or a larger union shoot or something like that, but for the people out there, for the directors, you know, be as professional as possible. The material that Peter is offering here is, like I said, is stellar. It's going to help, you know, guide you in your choices and your decisions. Just some small stuff. You know, we've had actors who come in who, guys, they look the part and then can't act their way out of a paper bag. Mm-hmm. And that's really tough because they go, this person would have been perfect if they could just act somewhat. And then I've had people who don't look the part at all who are stellar actors. So in a recent casting situation, for example, there were three gentlemen for the lead in this thing, and two of them didn't look anything like what I wanted. They looked tough. I mean, they looked mean. I didn't want somebody who looked mean. Brilliant, brilliant actors, but they lost, sadly, they lost because they would not be the person who was right for the role. Mm-hmm. And just an offhand thing, I just before the show responded to an email from a director friend of mine who asked me to audition, and I auditioned. And I read, the callbacks hadn't happened or anything, and I read. And before I went in, I said, so what's the likelihood you're going to cast me? You know, I mean, is it a 1% chance, a 50% chance? He said, no, it's like 80%. You know, he said, I really want to see what you do with the material. I said, all right. So I went to the audition. I auditioned. I got a letter that said, sorry, I didn't cast you. You know, your audition was great, but I didn't cast you. Somebody else came in who fit the role better. And I wrote back, because I knew this was going on, and I was thinking in my head, maybe I should contact him and let him off the hook. You know, because I didn't know.
Right.
I figured enough days have gone by where he's got to figure that I figure that something happened. But I was going to, like, say, don't worry about it. But the letter I sent back was, no, thanks for the opportunity. You do what's ever right for the project. That's the whole point. You don't do it because I'm your friend. You cast the most perfect person for the part, you know, for the totality of your project, and go with that. And then I noticed he, and I didn't even read this, he said, I'm going to write another part in there for you because I want you in my project. So I then went back and said, well, thank you very much. But that is, it, as a director, as an actor, typically we don't think that way. We go, I can do this as well as anybody, and they should have cast me. Mm-hmm. But what you're pointing out, Peter, is that there are so many things that come into play when somebody shows up in the room. And when it's how they look, whether they're talented, you know, whether they can take direction, and that taking direction is a huge part. I mean, it goes back to me, it goes back to are they respectful from the start? You know, are they able to adapt? Are they able to be flexible? Are they able to think on their feet? So anyway, that was some of my thinking about some of the things that you said, because you've said so many great things. And,
well, again, I mean, it's the casting thing is such a huge part of our business, and there's all of these, like, people, like, there's workshops for actors on how to get through the audition. There's a whole bunch of books and written books because it is such a huge part of it. And again, these are just guidelines, because the one thing you can't judge upon is who's the director. What kind of background do you have? What kind of personality do you have? What kind of experience do you have? That's going to be different in every single director, producer, the room, the casting director, all of those. What's the project? What's the stress? What's the pressure? And then you go on to the actors as well, talking about what are your background? What's your pressure? What's your experience? And I think just to pick up on what you're talking about, that not every actor, even Academy Award-winning actors, are right for every role. Like, everybody has to understand that, and that you can get the best. And the priority, if you have to err on any side, is getting the best actor rather than the best looking actor, because at least you're going to have some performance. And then if you start at that process, it's like your friend was saying he was going for the, or you were saying you were doing with those gentlemen, you had to choose someone else. If the role is that specific, right? It's like not every character has to be that specific. They can have variations on a theme. And if the person has to be maybe a person of color, that's one thing. Okay, granted. Okay. I mean, let's be realistic here. Or someone has to be 6'5" because it's all about and the best actor was 5'5" and it's about a basketball game and you're taking, okay, these are extenuating circumstances, right? But you have to understand going into these as a director that the producers and everybody say that's the right role or that's the right person for the role. But on the day you're standing on a set with 100 people looking at you, the producer says, make them act better, you know, and you're the one as the director going, you have to deal with this. So, and again, keep in mind that what the problem with casting is that you're going to get actors that are going to come in and they know how to audition. These people are really, really good at doing auditions and they get roles, right? But when they come up on the set, they kind of don't have it anymore because they're doing maybe a bigger role or bigger things. And I've seen this. I've seen it just like, whoa, where did this come from?
Right.
And they don't have what it takes, but they can get through the audition. They know it. They're comfortable. They know the buzzwords. They know all of this. They do their homework. They've done it. They feel comfortable. Boom. And then the other group is the group that are really, really good actors, but they fumble through the audition because they're nervous. They can't get through it. And all of a sudden, there's all these like brilliant actors out there that don't get a chance. And that's unfortunate because we won't know who they are, because they're not getting through this process. So I think from a casting director, producer, and a director point of view, allow things to happen in the cast room. And by making adjustments and seeing things, or if in doubt, come back for a callback, give them another shot. You know, after a while, it's your experience too. Your experience can just tell to a certain extent, no. And when in doubt, bring them back. That's always my expression. If you and the producer and the cast director are looking and one person says yes and one person says no and the look is right, bring them back. Just bring them back. That's what it's all about, right? It'll give you as a director an opportunity to play with them a little bit more. And, of course, when they come back for callbacks a lot of times are about chemistry, so that you're actually, when you bring for the callbacks, you're actually bringing actors in the opposites of each role. So now you're mixing and matching the actors. So now you get to see them not with a reader, but now playing with another actor. And callbacks are great because now it's like, okay, I got through the first hurdle, and now the actors are playing opposite each other. And now they have to listen, and now they're supporting each other, and that's the callback process. So that's that third process, or the second process. The first is this initial casting session, cattle call, we call it. The second one is these callbacks where you want to see chemistry. And that's so important.
I wanted to say, too, in the initial interview casting session, a large portion of my guests are casting directors. I have a lot of friends who are casting directors, and one of the points that they make, and by the way, I'm one of those people who considers myself, horrible at auditions. Give me the role, I can rise to the occasion. That kind of thing. But it's that 5 minute kind of, block of time where you got to come in and wow somebody. I'm like, the way I always consider myself is I'm like the horse that starts out of the gate late but gets to the finish line first. So I understand that, and I see that when casting as well, that there are people, but casting director friends of mine have said, your job is not to act in movies as an actor. Your job is to book the work. That's your job, is to get the job.
Wow.
And it really flipped my head around about that. It meant, maybe I need to start taking this audition thing a whole lot more seriously and really, improve the craft. Because if there are all these guys out there who are really good auditioners and some can act and some can't act, well, then I'm not even in the ballpark, for consideration if I can't get through the interview. So it benefits every actor to really learn how to audition as well as be able to carry through on the set, because that's ultimately what the director, what you're looking for is somebody who can deliver when they're in front of the camera and not just
right.
while you're in the room.
So true, Rex,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm listening.
No, I was going to say, we have our first cast and crew meeting tomorrow, and I'm really eager for this project that we're doing and that I am directing in this one. Is that the guy that we finally cast in this movie blew us away with his abilities, and it was just so amazing, and I'm really looking forward to being able to work with him and the other actors that we've cast. I wanted to say something though, because I'm going to go way ahead. We had people who we offered parts to. We said, we would give you this part. Now, keep in mind where I am. I'm not currently in L.A. I'm not casting L.A. actors. I'm in the Midwest. And we said things like, we'd really like it if, you'd come in and you'd read and you got the callbacks and all this kind of stuff. And now we want to, give you this part. And people write back and go, well, I'm only going to do it if I get this part.
Right.
Or somebody wrote me and said, well, I'm not going to do it if I don't have any lines. And I'd go, you know, my first, the thing that got me into SAG was a silent bit in a movie. And and I mean, it was so amazing. And then somebody had the audacity, again, this, we're in the Midwest, it's not L.A. I mean, I wouldn't even, if somebody said this in L.A., I would. But this actress wrote me back and said, well, that's
300
great.
Other people sitting in the hallway, yeah, right.
Well, I mean, this actress, yeah, right. But this actress wrote me back and said, okay, here's the hours I can work on the days that you want me. And I said, well, thanks, we'll catch you next time. You know, I mean, we're recasting now. Because, you know, I mean, you really have to have your head, you know, and some of these people have, you know, daytime jobs and things like that, and, you know, but they've been scheduled now for, you know, 2 months knowing what the weekends are and things, you know, or the days that they're going to be shooting and different times. And then at the last minute for this actress to go, well, I can work from like, you know, 6 to noon and then again from 4 to 8. And I'm like, well, I can't hold up a whole cast and crew, you know, and for you. So, I mean, it's just some things, to, you know, the reason I point this out now is because I think it's the same attitude that people carry into the room. It's the same baggage that we as actors sometimes carry around, sometimes because we don't feel we ever get the right chance, or we don't feel that we get enough opportunity, or because somebody, you know, 5 years ago, you know, pissed us off in a casting room or something like that, that we somehow protect and insulate ourselves, or we don't understand the business and protocol. And all of it, I believe, is part of that casting session. It's who you are when you walk in.
Yeah. And like I said before, it's like Noah's already there. And I've taught sessions to actors about audition workshops, and I've done that several times, and from a director's perspective, and I tend to get in a little bit of trouble as I've wanted to do. But when I said things like, well, okay, so if you walk in the room and you do your audition, and then you come in and you say your first part, and they say, well, thank you very much, without doing, like, the director, they don't do the adjustment, I said, why don't you ask to do it again? And they go, what? We never taught that way. We're not supposed to do that, you know. I go, well, how are they supposed to tell your range if like they just say, well, thank you, goodbye, we'll see you. What happened to the casting director? Then they think I'm problematic. And I said, well, Noah's already there. You don't. If they say thank you very much, the chances are you didn't get the role anyways. What have you got to lose? And it's like a real. I mean, it's easy for me to say that, but it may be a director or producer that, you know, they just don't understand the casting process either. They come in, they say the one thing, they go. And now they're trying to choose for callbacks. And they're choosing without giving the opportunity for the actor to show their range. And that is wrong, and I'm going to stand by that. And I think that an actor comes in, and on the other side of the coin also, if the actor says, okay, can you just do it again, do it differently, they may not give you specific notes. Don't bloody well do the same thing you just did, right? Do something totally different. It's like not rocket science there, you know?
I so heartily agree. By the way, I want to keep an eye on the time because I know that you're going to have to go here pretty soon. We've got, about 6-7 minutes left. I think also that it's important to understand that the difference between seeing a casting director and not having the director in the room and then interviewing for the director, because the casting director may very well have different kinds of things that they do. But the actor also needs to understand, okay, I'm with the casting director. Now, if she's in the room with the director, I still have to make her, I say she or he, that person look good, you know, and be professional. And also I have to recognize that I'm now in front of the producer and or director and or producer and writer, whatever the situation may be. And I'm there for a reason. The actor is there for a reason. So if they, because I was going to mention that earlier, if they don't ask for you, if they don't suggest, you know, a change, if they don't want you to do it again, my guess is if they just said, okay, thanks, that's good. And if you say, can I do it again? They go, no, perfect. You probably don't have it.
Exactly.
But
it's worth it. And you do it. And again, I think the politics is pretty severe in any part of the business, but very, you know, very strong here, because a lot of times what will happen is that, you know, I think certainly in like bigger cities, L.A., New York, Toronto, Vancouver, et cetera, but that the directors coming in, like say in Vancouver, most likely they're American or they don't live in the city, right? But the casting directors do. So what will happen is that when you're coming, when the actor kind of comes in, they're actually auditioning yes, they're auditioning for the director, but they don't want to piss off the casting director.
Right.
Because if they don't have this role, okay, that's fine. That's just the name. That's a number game. But they want to come back to the casting director. And they want their agent to phone the casting director. And the casting, no. They always come in. They always ask, I don't want them in the room. And this is what a lot of actors have said. And I go, well, that's just part of the politics. You know, you make a choice, you know. And it has to be an individual choice. It's not. But if actors understand that without the chances are without doing another take differently, very simple conversation here, they're not going to tell you if you can take direction or if you have range.
Right.
And ultimately, that's it. If you walk in the room and it's a one-shot deal and they walk out, and like you said, you know, maybe you probably don't have it anyways or you don't look the role or whatever. But and if you do ask and they say no, which most times they're probably going to say yes to do it again. Now, here's the other thing on politics, and I'll sort of start wrapping up with this. There's a difference between TV series and mm-hmm. one-off movies. So
right.
that what happens if you're coming in, it's a TV movie or a short film or a feature, whatever it is, that's one shot at it. You walk in, you either get it or you don't. Keep in mind from politics that on a TV series, you can walk in and you got the producers of the series and the casting director of the series, and you have the director of the episode. All right?
Right.
Is everybody? I hope everybody understands.
And the producer's and then, likely the writer.
Well, yeah. So, but they're looking for everything. So what will happen is the actor will come in, and they may not be right for the role for this episode. But what could happen is the actor leaves the room. They go, you know what? That person's not right for this role, but three shows down the road, we have this other character we're thinking about. Let's bring
right.
them in for that. So from TV series, from an actor, from politics, that's the big one, right? You have more still opportunity to show your stuff, and it may not be right. And I had that happen to me when I was directing John Was Once a Thief in Toronto. And I think this woman walked in and blew us away. And I said, yes, that's the person. I was even a producer on the show, right?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yes, this is the person. She fits it. It was a one-of. She blew everybody away. Fabulous. And I said, that's what we want. And we all agreed. And then about a day later, the two executive producers walked into my office. And I look like I did something wrong. And they go, Peter, we have some bad news for you. And I go, what? And he said, well, you know that woman that you cast? We have a role coming up that it extends a bit. And we think she's perfect for that. And so we have to. And they were very humble and kind of because we all wanted the best role, but they made the choice for the production. And so and she's gone on to do big things right now. It was great. We all saw the talent. And I had to recast for that particular role, understood the production value that she had. They made a bigger role for it. Right. And that's what. And the producer did another TV series and she starred in it. So it's like these are the things that happen. And from an actor's point of view. And, of course, there's one thing, too, that we always say, the expression is every actor can ride a horse. And that's the expression we have on the directing side, which means if you're doing a Western,
right.
Rex, you walk in, one of the first things, or someone will phone you up and say, well, Rex, they're doing a Western. The first question I have is, can you ride a horse? And, of course, you're going to say,
of course.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And but you've never ridden a horse in your life. But
exactly.
If you say no, it's not like, well, okay, thank you very much. We'll call you for the next show. You want to come in. If you get the role, you better learn how to ride a horse fast. So it's like you're coming in for the role. We're all adults. We all know that everybody wants the job, and everyone's going to do everything they can to get the job, and we have to make sure that this is happening. And this literally happened to me. I was shooting and directing a Western, and, well, it was 1940s, but it was on a ranch, so they had to ride horses. And the actor came in, yep, can ride a horse, I've done this, and no problem, he fit the role. And bang, you know, next thing you know, he couldn't ride a horse, and started, you know, you design all these shots, right, where the actor comes up and stops and looks, and I had to redesign my shots, and, you know, all this kind of stuff,
yeah.
You're kind of mumbling under your breath, and, you know, anyways.
Every actor can ride a horse.
But
at the same time, it's amazing what lengths some people will go to. I had a situation like 1980 where I did a film and they said, can you ride? And I said, well, yeah. And they said, well, we want you to really be able to ride. And I said, okay. And they cast me and they gave me, I think it was 6 or 8 months worth of riding lessons that they paid for.
Wow.
Prior to the filming of this part, because they wanted me to be able to do my own stunt riding. And
yeah.
Not falling off the horses or anything. So, I mean, that happened. I had somebody offer to do fast draw for a different film and stuff like that, where they go, well, we'll get your fast track license. That didn't materialize, so no, I can't fast draw. There was a question I wanted to ask. I know we're at the end of the hour for you, Peter, but the question I wanted to ask or to talk about, because some people might be confused about this, and it's, okay, let's say you come in and they give you two scenes. One's a lighthearted scene and one's a dramatic scene, and they go, okay, read. And so you read the one, they go, okay, now do the other. Now, they're looking at maybe your range or your ability to do both, but they don't necessarily say, okay, well, here, let's adjust the negative, not the negative, but the dramatic one, or let's make some adjustments to the comedic scene. So they haven't adjusted anything, but they've given you two scenes. Now, I've been on auditions like that. What do you think about those? And what, you know, I mean, you still can't tell if they take direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think at that point what they're doing without making an adjustment is seeing your range by doing two different scenes.
Right.
And so I think what it is then is you, as an actor, again, what's the politics of the room? How much time do you feel you have? How big are the scenes? You know, everybody's under time pressure. So if you come in and say, okay, well, at least if I do these two scenes, I'm going to, and they're very different scenes, right? One is when she married her husband. The other one is at her funeral, his funeral, just for sake of argument, right? Okay, well, I'm going to work my subtext, and I'm going to come in and go, okay, I'm doing my prep work. I'm going to prep for two different versions of each one. Now, if they only come in and say, okay, fine, now do the sad one, I know where I'm going to go on that one. So that at least the difference is we're going to see a difference, even though it's another scene, we're going to see the range that this person has. And so it may be a little harder, but at least you have an opportunity to do that. So that's good, right? I mean, for myself as a director, I like to say take the same scene and do an adjustment on it, because it's just based on what we just did, right? But here is that's not going to happen as an actor. At least you're fortunate enough to have a scene that can give you some range. So you better prep both and make sure you show a big range in there, because that's your job now. That's what they're giving you. We're giving you an opportunity to do that. It's just the way they're doing it.
Well,
and I don't
I
think
also,
it's either good or bad. It's just strictly individual. I hope everybody understands that. These are just personal things.
Well, and I also think that if there are at some point considering you for casting, you know, or for a callback or for the job, that they will either say, well, here, you know, change this up and see if you take direction, or, you know, not let you do the second one because they don't need to, or you do both scenes and then they, you know, I mean, in other words, they'll find a reason to keep you in the room longer if they're really interested. And if they're not really interested, they'll say thanks, goodbye.
I think that's quite true, because even if you came in and blew them away, they may talk to you, they may do something about it, or you can tell by their reactions, et cetera. So I think you're right on that one. You know, if they do talk to you a bit, but you never know. Like other directors, and a lot of directors, you know, like myself, it's like you're not going to tell one way or the other whether we like you or not, because we're very poker faced. I have to be poker faced. I do the same with everything, whether you can't act or you're a brilliant actor, because I need to remain neutral so I don't try to affect as much of your performance as possible. And everybody in the room, you try to do that. And I think that's the secret. But like you said, if they are given that opportunity, go for it. Show your range. Show that you can take direction.
All righty. Well, we're out of time. And, Peter, I want you to again mention that the 23rd and 24th of June in Toronto, you have a program coming up. Give the details of that, please.
Yeah, it's called The Essentials of Film Directing. It's Raindance Toronto is putting it on. You can get a hold of them at raindancecanada.com. It's a two-day film directing course. They can get onto the website, Raindance Toronto, Raindance Canada, find it. And it's called Essentials of Film Directing. Read all about it. Hope to see you there.
And I had a conflict, but before the show, I told Peter, I said, well, I would be there. And I would definitely be there. So that I wish I could make that happen. But I'll have to catch you on the next one. But if you're listening and you can go to Raindance and you can get to Toronto, I heartily recommend it. And I know if you've listened to all these hours, you're going to want to be there anyway. And your website is actioncutprint.com. You've got the e-zine,
director's chair.
You've got the blog, Film Directing Tips. You're on Facebook. And you want people to follow
Twitter.
You on Twitter?
Yeah, BC Filmmaker. That's at BC Filmmaker.
And so there we have it. You'll be coming back, and we'll continue this talk about casting and so much more. And I really appreciate it, Peter. You have a great rest of the day and a fabulous weekend. And thanks for all of the fantastic wealth of information you shared this time and all the preceding times. You also want to go back and listen to his first AD series on Rex Ike's Movie Beat, as well as this director series, and check into the fine products that he offers, because they're an absolute boon for the first AD and for the director and for the filmmaker in general. So check into those. Peter, have a great one. Best to Trilby and you, and enjoy, and we'll be talking to you soon. We'll let the listeners know when you're coming back.
Thanks, Rex. Take care.
All right, bye-bye. Mr. Peter Marshall. And I want to thank him for being here, as always. And I want to thank you, the listeners and readers of Movie Beat. I want to thank you for the letters and the phone calls and for meeting me in person and for the love and support. And I want to thank you for sharing this website and my guests with your industry connections and your friends and your Twitter followers and your Facebook people and everything. I really do appreciate it that you do that. And I ask you to continue to share the website and these interviews with your friends and your contacts. And also, please do leave comments, whether you're listening live or archived. If you listen live, you can join us in the chat room. We hope you do, and you'll invite others to do so as well. But archive shows, you know, you can leave comments right there at the player. You can rate and review the podcast. I also recommend that, you know, if you've got a smartphone or something, get the podcast, because you can take them with you wherever you go. Download it to your favorite electronic device and have them with you 24/7. All of the interviews are available. Again, you can follow Peter on Twitter at BC Filmmaker, and you can follow me on Twitter at Rex Ike's Movie BT. It's Rex Ike's Movie BT. That last word, beat, is abbreviated. It's BT. You can become a friend on Facebook at Rex Ike's Movie Beat Friends. Rex Ike's Movie Beat Friends. It's all spelled out. It's right there on Facebook. And you can also find me on YouTube at Rex Ike's Movie Beat as well. Well, I also have a blog. I also, this film that I'm directing called Serum the Movie has a friends page on Facebook. Would love you to go there and take a look at it. We have a production blog and things that we're doing and photos and video and stuff that's all forthcoming. Also, you can follow Serum the Movie on Twitter. It's S-E-R-U-M, the movie on Twitter. All right, everybody, have a fabulous day. Make your movies. Keep in mind, I got lots of fabulous guests coming up. And so stay tuned. Complete your projects. Until we meet the next time, that is a wrap.